Hey, Toby.
Hey, Greg.
So we've been doing this podcast network thing for a long time.
Yeah, it seems like it.
And we're finally starting now to get a little traction under us.
Yeah, a lot of people are jumping on board to have some shows.
Big shout out to some of our shows here. My 1-2-3 Cents, a wrestling podcast based off of a blog site by the same name. Kevin Huntsberger is running that one. And you and Craig are back with a sports podcast off of another blog that you started years back.
Yeah, Seat Above the Stands. And if you're into anything local, high school related sports, we do that. National related stuff, we do that. And arguing. We really do that. So yeah, tune in.
Matt Horst has a gamer, and he's been updating that as his time allows. And he and his wife, Sierra and Zach, also have Popped Culture, and where they talk about books, and they talk about movies and action figures and all kinds of good stuff.
Absolutely. A lot of different areas covered. We can always have more, though.
And Nerd United.
Dun, dun, dun.
And I've been so grateful for everybody who's decided to join me on episodes of that show, and we're looking to keep going strong, and we're gonna have a busy 2015. We hope that everybody tunes in and takes the Jittery Monkey podcast along for the ride on iTunes, on Stitcher. You just gotta do a little search,
and it's simple. You subscribe to the network and you get every show, so you can listen to the ones you want and don't have to listen to the ones you're not interested in. And be sure to rate them, please, because when you rate them and leave a comment, it really does help. So do that.
Yeah, make sure you hit that subscribe button and leave your feedback. Make sure that you follow Jittery Monkey Podcast on Facebook, as well as Jittery Monkey on Twitter. Now, that's monkey with a U, because the other Jittery Monkey was taken and the other guy didn't want to free it up.
Nah.
But we're busy, we're active, and we appreciate everybody who's joined us along this far.
Comic books, movies, TV, and more. Nerds are everywhere. It's time to assemble! It's Nerds United, a Jittery Monkey podcast. Here's your host, Greg Mahochko.
Welcome, everybody. Episode 32 of Nerds United. But more importantly, it is the second annual very special Christmas special. And I was going through the history of the episodes and what I was putting out a year ago, and I'm not going to lie, it wasn't very special at all. So, the bar has been raised. I have a kick-ass guest, and it's a voice and a name that you've heard on Nerds United before, but you gotta go back a little ways. Episode 11, February 2014, we sat down talking about Apocalypse and Seven Deadly Sins with the Stash Publishing crew and my guest for episode 32. But again, more importantly, the second annual very special Christmas special is Miss Alice Harvey. She is an artist and, again, part of that Stash Publishing crew, and we're gonna talk about that, but she's also a pastry chef. And 'tis the season to put the goodies in the belly. So, Alice, welcome back, I should say, to Nerds United.
Good to be back. I'm excited about it.
Now, you have had a busy year. Let's go back to February and the last conversation that we had, that great conversation with, I think, more people jam-packed into one episode of Nerds United than ever before, and that's including parts one and two of the trip down to Cape Comic-Con, down in Cape Girardeau at the end of March. So we had the entire crew on the show, and what have you been doing with Stash Publishing since February?
You know, it's been a really exciting year. A lot has changed. We've been releasing a few books. I know that Dave and Lauren finally got Ginormous released. It's an incredible book. I'm so, so, so proud of them. Jordan Williams finally got the second installation of Gunpowder Witch out. Also a really, really cool book. And then we actually just released a new anthology that's been a little bit different for us. We were kind of moving in the direction where we are bringing in outside talent and kind of producing for them as opposed to working within our small group. And we got this really exciting opportunity. There are a group of comic creators around the world, actually, it was really cool. It's a group of people. I mean, people who've worked with IDW, people who've worked with Vortex, Image, winner of an Eisner Award, which is very exciting. They had this collection of stories that they had all individually illustrated or written that didn't really have a place to go. So they approached Anthony about us putting it all together in this really kind of oddball book called Out of the Blue, which actually we just released on Black Friday. It's absolutely incredible. I think it's probably the best thing that we've come out with so far. It's just, like, I looked at a hard copy of it the other day, and I'm blown away.
Now, Out of the Blue, and this knowledge of that, the heads up from Anthony that he gave to me led to another episode of the podcast just two episodes back, because Stash Publishing was giving back from some of the proceeds from Out of the Blue to the comic book project, and I was able to have their founder on, Dr. Michael Bitz. And so tell me, you know, just the opportunity, knowing that this awesome anthology, that this awesome creative work is going out there and perhaps helping to bring about a new generation, or at least get kids doing the creative aspect of comics as well. What, give me your thoughts on that.
I think it's really exciting. You know, as an artist in any way, shape, or form, you know, you're really kind of giving back no matter what you're doing. And it's so exciting to see young people who maybe didn't have the opportunity or the tools or what have you before get into that and share that community with you. It's super exciting. And I really, really hope that this book can help kids just to get a little creative and express themselves and, you know, have some kind of outlet. Because I know that, I mean, I've been really creative my entire life, and I think I would have been poorer for it had I not been able to be.
Which kind of brings me to, you know, using your creative outlet in the baking, the bakery aspect of it. How did you, was baking kind of always an interest of yours, or what brought you into that field?
You know, I kind of grew up in a really traditional Southern family where, you know, my grandma was always in the kitchen. My mom was always in the kitchen. So the moment I was old enough to pick up a spoon, I was stirring a pot. You know, I was
nice.
Just kind of always there with them. And I think it's just kind of inherently who I am. I grew up in the kitchen. I have a love for it. It's kind of my heritage, and chose to take it that next step and do it professionally as opposed to just at home for fun.
As soon as I was old enough, I was in the kitchen picking up the spoon and licking it, usually on brownie day or chocolate chip cookie day.
I was one of those too.
And that's part of the reason why I am in the physical state that I am in. no, I love being in the kitchen, and I like experimenting on more on the savory side, like, you know, cooking dinner or grilling or things like that. For me, I don't get too experimentative. Is that the right word?
Experimentative.
There, experimental. How about experimental? I think that one's actually a word. But I don't, from the baking side, I follow the recipe. Usually it's a homemade, you know, like I've got my sister's gooey butter cookie recipe, which is always a fan favorite, a mom's chocolate chip cookie recipe. But I stick to those because that's like more so my comfort food. You know, that's what I turn to and I'm like, damn, it was a long day of work. I won't sit down and eat a dozen cookies, which I've done.
Story of my life.
So do you get that kind of creative, you know, the creative juices flowing and thinking outside the box from the baking aspect of it?
Yeah, yes and no. You know, baking is an entirely different animal. It's all science-based. You know, you really have to have, and I'm a big science nerd, so that makes me so happy. You have to really understand a lot of chemistry and just why things work the way they work. And once you know that, then you can get a little weird with it. You can be like, well, I know that, you know, this causes this to happen, so what if? and then you enter the lab and blow stuff up.
I feel like I'm having a conversation with the next Alton Brown.
You know, it's really funny you should say that, because I had somebody tell me that less than a week ago.
Great minds think alike. It's a theory that I've based my entire adult life off of, that you know, great minds, I don't even know who this person was that you were talking to, but if they're referencing Alton Brown and your own experimentation in the kitchen, in the lab, as you called it. So let's talk professionally. Did you have any type of formal schooling, or, you know, did it just, this is what I've been doing since I was knee high from a grasshopper, or whatever the hell that saying is, to now? I mean, tell me a little bit about your more adult life in the kitchen.
You know, I went to a traditional college for a while, and, you know, it just wasn't really scratching that itch for me. So I took a semester off, and I decided to go to culinary school. And I graduated from there, I want to say 4 years ago, and I've been in the kitchen ever since. Just kind of, you know, learning and building my bag of tricks. And it's kind of cool now, because I'm in a position where I'm kind of backpedaling back to those things that I grew up with, now that I know how to improve upon them and make it even better than they could have been before.
For, you say you've been in the kitchen ever, you know, 4 years now. How about a little bit of a free plug? Where are you working as this outlet for your chef, pastry chef-ness?
I am at Brasserie by Niche in the Central West End. That's at Euclid and the Cleed, very close to Forest Park. It is a fantastic, and do not underestimate the word fantastic here, French bistro. I am in love with this restaurant.
Très bien. That's the extent of my French right there. And I'm not even sure I got it right.
Good.
So St. Louis, essentially, is what you're saying. Central West End. What are they known for? I mean, is it mostly just pastry? Is it kind of all of that French cuisine? You know, help me out.
We do a lot of traditional French food, and I don't mean French food in the sense you imagine, you know, stuffy waiters with twirly mustaches.
Oh yeah.
Stuff like that. It's more of the country fare. I want you to imagine what people in the French countryside were eating 100 years ago. That's what we do. It's also a lot of stick to your bones, very comfortable food, good for cold winter nights. That's a lot of what we do there.
We
pay homage to a time in France that has almost been forgotten about.
Now, in all fairness, Alice, I don't know what Americans were eating 100 years ago. So
that's why you had to have restaurants that serve it, so people can learn.
Fair enough. Now, what are the top dishes that are being sold?
Let's see. We have a dish called cassoulet. That is a winter dish that we just put back on the menu, and it is a huge fan favorite. We have a couple of guests that travel all the way up from, I want to say, Kentucky every year just to get it.
I was going to say, I need to know more. What's in the dish? I mean,
cassoulet it's a really cool dish. It's served in a cast iron skillet, and it's like a white bean generally that's been cooked down in a tomato-based sauce.
Reduced.
And then it has sausage and duck and like pork belly on top of it. I mean, it's a very masculine dish, very, very heavy, but it's so good. I want to think of, it makes me think of like my mom's like beanie weenies. I don't know if you ever had that going, but
just a very
an adult version of
a bit more upscale than
the Franks and beans. Sure, this came before beanie weenies.
I would hope so.
I would like to think so.
So, are you more on the pastry side of it, or are you just in there?
I'm on the pastry side now. I didn't start that way, but it kind of organically happened over time. I just have more of a love for it, and that's where I am now.
But we were talking before we went, before we started recording, and you enjoy cooking the pastries and baking them, but you're not really a sweets person.
Yeah.
So how do you make that work?
Well, it's really simple. I spend my, entire day, sometimes between 10, 12 hours a day making desserts, tasting desserts, surrounded by sweets. And at a certain point, I'm like, I just want some bacon.
don't we all?
If I have to eat any more sugar, I'm going to explode. What I really could go for right now is a salad, maybe? A burger? Just no sugar.
Okay, so, well, that helps clear the air, because when you said, you know, I'm a pastry chef, but I don't eat sweets, I got to thinking, another Alton Brown here, Cutthroat Kitchen, where one of the sabotages is only one person's allowed to taste their dish. And I'm like, how do you know, that what you're cooking is what you're intending to cook if you don't taste it, but you've since, you know, allayed those fears, if you will.
Yeah, I taste things constantly all day.
Awesome. And again, what's the name of the restaurant? Should someone be in the St. Louis area, they want to stop by, say hi, and taste your pastry chef wares?
That's at Brasserie by Niche at 4580
Laclede. 4580 Laclede, not to be confused with Laclede's Landing. So excellent, excellent. Now we're going to shift focus. I wanted to talk about the pastry chef aspect, and we're going to come back and talk about, you know, some holiday goodies, but we're also going to talk some comics, some movies, and some adaptation television. Isn't that right?
Yes, I'm excited about this. It's going to be good.
You work a lot of hours. You said sometimes as many as 12 hours a day. So do you have time, or have you been following up on all of these comic book adaptive television shows like Arrow and The Flash, even Walking Dead, Constantine, Gotham? There's a mess of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Have you been able to watch any of them or all of them?
I watched some of them. Some of them I started and didn't finish. Some of them I watched continuously. I'm a little all over the place about it.
So let's start with some of the ones that you started and kind of fell by the wayside, or maybe you lost interest or just fell behind and haven't caught up yet.
Well, I'll just say, and this is just my opinion, but I was not a fan of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I wanted so badly to like it, but I just am not a fan. So I watched the first few episodes, and I couldn't get into it, so I decided to cut my losses. Felt the same way about Arrow.
Did you, now, referencing Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., did you see Captain America Winter Soldier?
Yes.
Did you give Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. another chance, because it tied in with the movie?
No, I didn't. I might go back to it later. I don't even have a good excuse for myself about it.
Well, that's all right. Now, you also mentioned Arrow, one that you kind of struggled to get into, and now that it's had its mid-season finale, been following it online, at least following the story, so you like, oh, maybe it's something I need to jump back into?
No, you know, once again, I don't have a good excuse. I tried watching it. I didn't like it. I just don't think it was for me the way they set it up. I'm not a huge fan of the network to begin with, so.
So does that mean that you passed on The Flash?
No, I want to watch The Flash. I started watching Gotham, actually, and I got really, really into it. I love Gotham, and I wanted to watch all of that and then watch The Flash separately.
So that you don't have conflicting worlds.
Exactly. I didn't want to mix it up. I wanted to watch Gotham and all its glory and then watch Flash completely separate with a clean slate.
So since you mentioned Gotham and you started it out, you really enjoyed it, what have you liked about that show that airs, well, now it's in, of course, it's mid-season break, but it's first season, and what have you liked about what you've seen so far?
I think I'm one of those people where I love the backstories of those lesser-known characters, and I love that for the first time in a while, Batman is not the center of attention here. It's not, you know, all about Batman and, oh, I don't have any parents and Gotham, oh, this city. It's about, I love learning more about those little side characters and their backstories and their histories, and I love that I have an entire show of that now.
In all fairness, though, I mean, you kind of poo-pooed on Bruce Wayne, oh, I don't have any. That's pretty tragic. I mean,
it is, and I'm a huge Batman fan, so I can't say anything too bad about Bruce Wayne, because I've been a Batman girl my entire life.
It's just one of those where the Batman, perhaps the Bruce Wayne origin has been done so much. Let's explore and flesh out some of these other characters, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you don't just become an evil mastermind out of thin air.
It has to grow from somewhere. So, Oswald Cobblepot, I mean, the Penguin, had every opportunity to be written off the show after that season or that series premiere, makes his way back to Gotham, despite being warned never to return to Gotham. Had the out, he could have started a fresh life, but what, he had vengeance on the mind?
You know, I don't feel like the Penguin gets enough credit. He's actually one of my favorite villains. When I thought he was getting written out of the show, I got really, really, really upset. Then he came back.
I was going to say, they put your fears to rest very early, because at the end of that first episode, spoiler warning, by the way, if you haven't been watching Gotham, first of all, you should be, but we're going to get into some very early plot points here. That first episode, you know, Jim Gordon misses him, obviously, on purpose, and pushes him into the river, swims away, and yeah, you think, okay, maybe he's done, but to Fox's credit, right there in that, you know, next week on Gotham, you see him standing, you know, walking on the road, and hey, I need a ride, guys. And so kind of, at least from my perspective, made it seem like they always had a plan for him and did a good job of making sure the viewer knew that Penguin wasn't going anywhere.
Well, in all fairness, we all know the Penguin does come back to Gotham eventually. I mean, if you follow Batman at all. But I think it was kind of a cool way to create kind of that conflict there and a motive for him as a character.
The way he's kind of working, you know, with the criminal element and kind of trying to build his way up to be, you know, what we would know as the Penguin. And in a lot of variations of the story, of course, Penguin has the big casino, and off the top of my head, I can't even remember the name of the casino, but you're the Penguin Master. Do you know the name of the casino?
I don't. Now I feel like I need to look that up right now. I'm just like filling that gap in my knowledge.
We are 0-2 on you know, between the two of us. It'll probably come to me as soon as, you know, I stop recording and look it up. But it's something ice. The word ice is in play there. But of course we know he rises to the top. You know, in Penguin lore. How long do you think this Gotham series goes before Bruce Wayne leaves the Academy and goes off on his worldwide search to find himself and comes back? I mean, how long potentially do you see this series of Gotham lasting?
I don't know. I mean, so far, I mean, it gets good reviews, so I mean, it has a potential to go on for a long time. I mean, you have different prominent villains there coming into themselves as evil masterminds. I mean, even like Catwoman, she's still a kid, so potentially this could go on for a very, very long time if they want to follow these story arcs that they're kind of intertwining in there. I hope it does.
And there have been a lot of Easter eggs in the show, and a lot of, you know, pay attention, something might come back later, especially revolving around Batman's number one nemesis, the Joker. There have been a lot of hints dropped. Maybe it's this character. In fact, right there in that series premiere, there was a failed audition for the stand-up comedian in Fish Mooney's Club.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think we will ever get to the point where the Joker, with the Joker makeup, will ever make an appearance in Gotham?
You know, I don't know. I don't really know if I would want to. I like the mystique about the Joker. You know, it's one of the, you know, if not the longest running Batman villain ever.
Mm-hmm.
There's a certain mystique to him. You know, how do you become that crazy? And so I kind of want to, like, follow him, but at the same time, you know, I think it'd be cool also just to kind of follow some of these lesser characters too.
And I like that it's very much based in a real world. I don't expect that we'll see, you know, like Killer Croc or, you know, Clayface. I think maybe the most off the, you know, deep end they might go is a Scarecrow type of character with that toxic gas, you know, the fear gas. But I really don't know. I'm excited to see where that series goes. Obviously, like I said, we're only half a season in, and anything. I mean, the nice thing about it is really the door's wide open.
Exactly. I love the show so far. I really want it to keep going. I watched Arrow, and like I said, I wasn't a huge fan, so I was a little hesitant going into it, but right out of the gates, I loved what they're doing with it. I think it's a cool show. I'm just excited to see all the Easter eggs and little things they bring in here, because as a super nerd, you know, you can barely contain yourself when you find something like that. Like,
And you see something. Exactly. You see something and you know, like, I'm super nerd, as you so eloquently stated. My wife, not there yet. So I will pop when I see something and she'll be like, I don't get it. And so then I'll have to explain it to her. She says, I still don't get it. And that's okay. That helps, you know, that really creates a nice dynamic. One of the things, of course, my last episode, I talked about a lot of the mid-season finales. One of them that I overlooked, because sometimes I'm like that, The Walking Dead. Is that a series that you got into?
Yeah, I actually got into it. I wasn't into The Walking Dead initially. I was kind of a late bloomer on that one. I haven't watched the finale yet. I worked all night that night, and I haven't watched it yet. And I really need to. I have no good reason why I didn't, because I was anticipating it so much. It's just been kind of lame, really.
So now we have to shift focus, because I'm not going to start a conversation that's going to be, you know, have spoiler content in there.
Some people kind of spoiled the Big Bang from it for me already.
I'm going to blame Drew for that. It's all Drew Rose's fault.
He might have done it. I don't remember who the culprit was, but somebody kind of spoiled the big, you know, there's always that thing that
right,
moment.
That, and to its detriment, AMC itself on its official Facebook page spoiled it for its West Coast, you know, American viewers.
I was so upset about that. I wished I wasn't following AMC on Facebook, because I saw that. I'm like, wait a minute.
So there have been a couple theories out there. One theory is that big moment was a dream, was dreamt, imagined by Carol. Are you putting any stock in any of that nonsense?
I generally don't, you know. I'm a patient person. I just wait and see.
And second part of that is, since the big moment, that event at the mid-season finale, there has been a rush of fans taking to the internet, building up these internet petitions, trying to get Robert Kirkman, the Walking Dead, you know, writer and executive producer of the show, trying to get him to, hey, can you reverse this big event thing that happened? If it's not a dream, if it's part of the story going on, would you want them to suddenly kind of erase what we've already seen?
I don't know, because I don't know where they're going to go with it from here. And, you know, I might be okay with it. You know, it's a show that traditionally kills off a lot of characters.
Yeah.
So I'm not surprised when they do something crazy, you know, because something crazy always happens.
Very interesting to see where...
they usually bounce back, though. And they're like, all right, okay, well, we'll keep doing this then.
And I think...
This is a zombie apocalypse. What are you going to do?
And the way that it happened, too, I mean, the way the big moment occurred left it in such a way where the likelihood of a return in an undead form would be very slim. I'm trying to keep it as vague for anybody who hasn't seen it. So, I don't know. Let's move on from The Walking Dead. Constantine is another one that I've been really high on since I found out they were going to make the show. B, since I found out they were going to make a show with a British or Welsh actor, Matt Ryan, who Constantine, the character from the books, is from Liverpool, I think. Blackpool, I don't know, one of those pools over in England, and I'm going to get railed in the comments for not knowing that one also. it was Constantine. Is that a show that you had any interest in? I mean, it's.
I do. I want to watch it really bad, but the same reason I haven't started. Flash yet is that I wanted to watch it on its own. I've got a lot of mixed reviews about it, though, for people I know who are currently watching it.
Well, I'm
a little hesitant.
Throw out all those reviews. Listen to your old buddy Greg. Phenomenal show.
Really? I heard he doesn't smoke at all. And I got a little butthurt, I'll admit.
I will tell you this. Very early in some of those early episodes, you see they edited out the cigarette. I mean, it looked like he was standing in the cold with some steam or whatever, vapors escaping. In later episodes, either they missed it in the editing room or something, but yeah, he absolutely lights up.
Okay, good. Because, you know, that's such an important part of his character.
Absolutely.
And if you get rid of it, I'm like, well, what is this then?
So you're watching your order priorities, however you want to put it, Gotham, The Flash, Constantine. Are we all caught up?
Yes.
Okay. I think you'll really enjoy them all. But again, I'm biased because I prefer all of those shows to the Vampire Diaries that somehow gets on my television.
I have never watched it. No desire to watch it.
Oh, okay.
Why would I when there's all these great superhero adaptations on TV?
That's what I'm saying. I think you need to have a conversation with my better half and say, no, hold on. No, that will only get me in trouble. So,
yeah, we don't want that.
We talked about Captain America Winter Soldier and how you saw that. How many of these comic book adaptations onto the big screen have you seen? Because there have been a few this year. Captain America, Amazing Spider-Man 2, Guardians of the Galaxy, of course. And I know I'm missing... Days of Future Past. Have you been able to keep up to date on the big theater releases?
I've seen everything except for Days of Future Past.
Okay, all right. And is it just a schedule thing or not an X-Men?
Yeah, it was a schedule thing. Just I didn't get the time to go see it, and I just haven't gotten around to it yet. But I definitely want to.
That's another solid one, and I really like where they are going with that story, and I hope this isn't a spoiler for you, Alice, but the fact it's leading into X-Men Apocalypse, I didn't spoil that. You knew that, right?
No.
Crap.
That's okay, though. That's not a big deal.
Well, you'll just want... crap.
It's okay.
All right, I got to remember to...
I hang out with comic book nerds all the time.
Things
get spoiled on a fairly regular basis.
I'm editing this part out of the show. No, I'm kidding. all right, so Guardians of the Galaxy, of course, just hit store shelves within the last couple of weeks, just in time for the holidays. I think that as much as I enjoyed Captain America... And even Days of Future Past, I think Guardians of the Galaxy just raised the bar a little bit. And, of course, I'm a huge Green Lantern fan, and I enjoyed the Green Lantern movie. So, you know, all of you out there, don't judge me too harshly on that. It's because of my Green Lantern bias, my Emerald bias. But I think Guardians of the Galaxy did it upright because they were able to implement that spatial aspect of it. I mean, being out... off Earth, off world, and be light and entertaining like Hal Jordan is initially supposed to be written. What was your take on Guardians of the Galaxy?
I think, hands down, it's the best movie, I guess, comic adaptation movie I've seen yet.
Really?
Yeah, it's my favorite one so far.
And it's not an unpopular opinion. I mean, a lot of people are saying that because they kept it light. You know, a lot of people say, oh, DC should be more like Marvel. But to that point, I think DC needs to keep being DC, because why should they, not that Marvel's not doing it right, because Marvel isn't, and box office returns show that, but why can't there be two different styles of the comic book movie? You have the kind of light and colorful and fun Marvel side, and you have a bit more, you know, movie with a bit more of a serious tone from DC. I think we're at a point we should be able to enjoy both.
I agree. You know, DC for me has always been, you know, if I want to read something that's a little bit darker, a little bit more brooding, more serious, then I'm going to opt for something DC. You know, it's Marvel, it's a little bit more lighthearted. There's more laughs. You know, it's more, you know, a good. I don't want to say that DC isn't a good time, but just it is more lighthearted, like you mm-hmm. said, and that's okay. You know, there's nothing wrong with that.
Guardians of the Galaxy definitely left us kind of happy. I mean, they won the day. Baby Groot, you know, stole everybody's hearts. My wife left the theater, and she says, I think Rocket is my new favorite comic book character ever. So Captain America Winter Soldier definitely left a different tone with Marvel fans, because there was, you know, all this subversion. What was your takeaway from Cap 2, and how do you think it's going to lead into what we see from Marvel next?
I liked it. I didn't care for it as much as the first one, but that's not to say it was bad, you know. Just when you compare two movies, you're going to have a favorite, obviously.
Absolutely.
I liked it a lot. It, as far as where it's leading, you know, I'm kind of curious. For me, a lot of this is kind of weighing on where the new Avengers movie goes. You know, I feel like the entire Marvel universe is hanging in the balance of how they handle that. Oh, and then everything else kind of falls into place.
And to our benefit, we've got Joss Whedon in charge of the Avengers, mm-hmm. and can't do anything but love and respect his vision. Because of how he treats the source material. And, I mean, obviously Avengers knocked it out of the ballpark. I'm so excited for Age of Ultron that I can't wait. And that one's coming up just a few months away.
I'm so excited.
Now, Avengers 2, that we're comparing apples and oranges. Avengers 2 or Batman v Superman?
Oh, man, I'm going to say Avengers 2.
All right. Is that because you kind of lean more towards Marvel, or just because you've seen the product that Marvel's put out and have a little bit more anticipation for it?
I think as far as, you know, the books and the characters and the universe is concerned, I'm a DC girl. As far as the quality of film, I'm a Marvel girl. So I kind of... I straddle the fence on that. It really just depends on what medium it is.
Which is interesting, but it's certainly not an uncommon response. You know, a lot of people say, yeah, you know, I love to read DC, but put something Marvel in front of me and, you know, for my eyes and ears to view, and that's where I'm going to go.
Yeah.
Except, of course, with you, the exception from you being that Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. just didn't hit home.
No, it's even worse because I'm a huge Joss Whedon fan as well, so I really, really messed up on that one.
I don't know. I don't even know where to take.
You know, I wanted to like it so much. You have no idea how much I wanted to like it. I, you know, was putting all of my energy into loving it, and it didn't happen.
Amazing Spider-Man 2 was in theaters this past summer. After, I think it was, if memory serves, it was wedged between Captain America Winter Soldier and X-Men Days of Future Past. Mm-hmm. It, again, stayed pretty close to the source material. There was, I don't want to say unexpected, but there was a termination of a character, if you will. But what was your take? A lot of people have not been on Sony's side, well, for a lot of reasons, but regarding the Amazing Spider or Amazing Spider-Man, I haven't personally enjoyed the first two films. And, you know, I think less my comic book preferences and more my movie preferences is where I start to get hit, you know, by diehards. You know, oh, Spider-Man was crap. Andrew Garfield can't act his way out of a wet paper bag or whatever. I don't know. I don't know what they're saying about me. But what were your thoughts on Amazing Spider-Man 2?
You know, I really liked it. You know, that second movie I always get a little bit scared on. Especially if I liked the first one a lot, because, you know, but sometimes it's just terrible. I liked it a lot, and I disagree with the popular opinion. I love Andrew Garfield as Spider-Man.
I thought he's done a really good job.
I think he is so true. What I like about Spider-Man, I think he's really true, too. You know, Spider-Man has so... That's a comic with a lot of personality to it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that so far in the movie adaptations, he's the closest one to that Spider-Man, you know? He's a smart aleck, kind of a pain, you know?
It seems where Sam Raimi's Spider-Man, you know, Tobey Maguire, they really buffed him up.
Yeah.
And they didn't do that.
Spider-Man's not a big guy.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's kind of taller, a little lanky, you know, but it's not his physique that gives him the strength. It's the fact that he was bitten by a radioactive spider. So I don't know if all the muscles, I mean, sure. You know, I was in the theaters when, Tobey Maguire took his shirt off that, you know, that first time and revealed the physique and all the girls are, oh, you know, or whatever sound girls make when they're impressed.
I felt that way about Tobey Maguire.
Yeah, but that's because you remember Pleasantville. So, but, no, I appreciate Andrew Garfield. Now they're already talking whether Sony works with Marvel for, you know, getting Spider-Man into Captain America Civil War or not. They're already talking about dumping Garfield for a new actor as Spider-Man, which I don't want to see, but I know that they've got a lot of
Hulk all over again. We're going to have a new Hulk in every movie.
Yeah, which has not gone very well. I mean,
no, not at all.
Mark Ruffalo is going to be the first actor, aside from Lou Ferrigno, to, you know, be Hulk in more than one appearance. So I don't know. Let's look forward. Turn the page, if we will. We've already touched a little bit on Age of Ultron, due in theaters in 2015. This is a hot button topic because a lot of people are not fans of what they've seen so far. What are your thoughts on Fantastic Four reboot set to hit theaters also in 2015?
I don't know. I don't really put a lot of thought into it. I'll admit I've been pretty distracted by Avengers. I haven't really thought about it much yet. I didn't care for the original, you know, I guess they made two of them, right?
Correct, yeah.
I didn't even remember. I didn't even care for it that much to remember. So, I mean, so far... And the reboots that they've been doing, you know, they didn't do so hot the first time around. They're giving another shot. They've been fairly successful. So I think it'll be good. But, you know, I'm just going to wait around and see.
And that's the thing, too, is there's been so little released that fans or, you know, whomever can only go by what they've seen or what they've heard.
Exactly. I mean, I don't have a lot to go on here.
We might get a trailer. We might get like a teaser trailer or something Super Bowl Sunday that just knocks our socks off and you know, puts all the doubters to rest. I don't know if it's going to happen, but we might. You never know what Fox has planned for that, because that's a weird franchise. And the fact that Marvel has stopped publishing, or in the near future is stopping the publishing of Fantastic Four, it's almost like they're trying to distance themselves from this theatrical, you know, what some might call an abomination.
I mean, it kind of put a stigma on the franchise, I'll admit. If you say Fantastic Four, and people go, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know about that.
They forget that was the first family of comics, you know?
Yeah.
All right. We have been talking with Alice Harvey. I use we like there's more than one of me. I have been talking with Alice Harvey, artist and pastry chef, for the second annual, very special Christmas special. We've been going at this conversation for almost 43 minutes now, and we haven't touched on Christmas yet. So, Christmas is this week. Let's turn back the hands of time. Young Alice Harvey, what was that one gift that you wanted as a child?
Oh, man, this is a sore topic. My mom's going to hate me for bringing this up.
Uh-oh. I don't want to get you in trouble. I don't want to get mom mad at me, so we can...
No, it's a funny story. So when I was little, I couldn't have been any older than 5 or so. The only thing in the world that I wanted was a My Size Barbie. And a My Size Barbie.
Is that like the Barbie that's creepily as tall as the young child?
Mm-hmm. And you could share clothes with her. And, you know, I don't really know I was so enticed about, but I had to have one.
Okay, carry on.
So there was nothing in the world I wanted more. I was obsessed. So my birthday rolled around, huge box, not a My Size Barbie.
0-1. You
know, it's got to be My Size Barbie. It has to be. Look at the size of that box. It couldn't possibly be anything else. Well, it was. So then Christmas rolls around.
So what was that phantom gift at birthday? Do you even remember?
It was a really big sprinkler.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here, go out and really water the yard.
It kind of looks like a palm tree almost. As a kid, it was a pretty cool sprinkler.
It was one of those you're supposed to run through in summertime?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. So, all right. That was the big box at birthday. Christmas.
Christmas rolls around. My mom's moment of redemption. I'm thinking to myself, there's no way she's going to mess it up this time.
You left plenty of hints. I know.
She's my mom. She's smart. She's an adult. So I come out on Christmas morning, huge box. And I know it's got to be it. And I open it, and it's a vanity. And my heart sinks. And at that point, you know, my childhood ended, and I gave up.
And what year was this?
I think it was probably 95, 96 maybe.
Oh, and the childhood was over.
Yeah, I gave up and said, well, just get me whatever you want.
I don't remember there being that one gift year in or year out that I had to have. I was under the impression for 25 years that my aunt and uncle got me a Nintendo Entertainment System, you know, for Christmas when I was young. And I don't know why I got that impression. Maybe they, you know, went in, you know, cahoots with my parents, and they provided a few games, and my mom's like, no, your dad waited in line for hours for that for you guys.
Oh my God.
I said, I feel like crap.
whole time your affection had been poorly placed.
<That's right. laughs> I said, Mom and Dad, I don't love you. No, I'm kidding. But the lesson was learned, because I'll never forget, I saved up $125 back in the 90s. You know, that was a year's worth of allowance, knowing the way that I spent money. And I said, I want to go to, I think it was Best Buy, but it might not have been, over in Fairview. And I said, I want to get a Super Nintendo. My dad's like, you really want to spend all your money on that? Yep, I sure do. All right, let's go. So the regular Nintendo was the only gaming system I ever got to date. No, I take that back, because my wife got me a PS3 a few years ago. So with the exception of those two, all the other ones I bought and paid for. But I can't remember one single gift that I'm like, man, I just have to have that. So, I mean, that's kind of a lame story on my end. What's the big item on the old gift list for you for this year? Is it something to help, you know, on the art side of it? Maybe something pastry chef related? Is it unrelated to either of the two?
You know, I feel like I've kind of toned myself down on Christmas over the past few years, but I really want a PlayStation 4. I mean, not so much that I'm, you know, banking on it for Christmas, but, you know, I wouldn't be mad.
Yeah.
If Santa Claus has dropped one off at my house, I wouldn't be angry with him about it.
I'm not going to lie. That's also on my Christmas list, and I've got my buddy Jared. I'm going to give him a shout out because he's soon to have a podcast here on the Jittery Monkey Network called Talking Smith with him and his wife, because their last name is Smith. Anyway, he's got me sold on, he's the reason I spend so much money, because I'll be talking with him on Facebook on a slow sales day at work, and next thing I know, I'm on Amazon looking at things, and he's the reason my bank account looks the way it does.
Oh, no, I love having friends like that.
which has, you know, it's positives and it's negatives. One of the things that I wanted to make sure that we discussed and that you had to bring with you was a recipe.
Yes.
You've got a recipe for, now is this for a Christmas delicious treat?
Yes, it is.
And will you email this to me because I don't have a pen and paper?
I absolutely will.
All right, so let's talk about, before you tell me the name of it, let's hear some of the ingredients in this delicious Christmas treat.
Sugar, of course.
Of course. Flour.
Naturally. Flour.
See,
water.
You need a binder, so egg.
Mm-hmm.
See, I've been watching Alton Brown. I'm on to you, sir. Okay.
But then there's the trump card in this one that brings it all together, and that is an entire, I guess, jar of Nutella.
You lost me.
You don't like Nutella?
No. I don't dislike it. I've never had anything. Like, usually it's Nutella on something, like toast or pancakes or spoon. I don't know if I've ever had Nutella, like, heard of it in. Maybe I'm just, okay. Now Nutella is the, what is it, chocolate hazelnut spread or something, or?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm on board. All right. So we've got eggs, flour, sugar, water, and a whole jar of Nutella.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anything else?
The salt for the water, and it has yeast, and that's pretty important.
Mousse?
Yeast.
Oh, yeast. Okay. I don't know how I got mousse out of that.
Yeah. So just bring a mousse. Some moral support.
I'm not gonna lie, you said mousse and I'm like mousse, like the dessert, right? So we're adding dessert to the dessert. This is gonna be awesome. Okay, you probably need a little cooking spray on your sheet or pan.
It's recommended. It's not necessary for this recipe though. I wouldn't worry about it too much.
Are we preheating the oven to 325 or 350?
I always just preheat the oven to 350.
All right, just as the standard rule of thumb.
I usually start with 350 unless it's something that's very particular about temperature. It's a good place to be.
So, what is the name of this delicious Christmas treat?
This is a Nutella braid.
Okay, so there's going to be a lot more work in it than... I was anticipating something easy, but when you said braid, I'm like, crap.
You know, it is. The thing is, it sounds a lot more complicated than it actually is. And most desserts are, they sound complicated until you really look at it and you're like, oh, that wasn't actually difficult at all. Or maybe I'm just jaded by the fact that I do it for a living.
So you,
tell me.
You take the ingredients, obviously you combine them in a mixing bowl of some sort. KitchenAid, I think, has probably the best mixing bowls, correct? Or am I just getting, you know, hit by brand recognition?
I'm a KitchenAid girl. If I could have any sort of arm attachment, I want you to think of Army of Darkness here.
Okay.
It would probably be a KitchenAid mixer.
I think what you're really wanting is to be like Cyborg of the Justice League and have that cybernetic where you can transform it to anything.
There you go. Even better.
Okay. All right. So we've got the KitchenAid. We've combined all the ingredients we have. Is it a pretty stiff mixture?
It's a bread. So yes and no.
Okay.
You know, you want it all to kind of come together into a cohesive dough. But you also want it to be soft. And the way I like to tell people what you're looking for is it to be soft, kind of like your cheek.
I shaved this morning, so that's even better.
There you go.
So
you want it to, you know, be solid, but have a little bit of give to it still. Still be soft, kind of, it's a good cooking word, supple.
Tender yet firm.
Yes.
And, of course, you're going to need the dough knife because if you're braiding, you probably are going to divide that dough into three equal pieces.
Yes.
And that's when the braiding commences.
Yes. And you really don't have to braid it, but it just looks so cool. And if you're trying to wow people for the holidays, you've got to have that wow factor. You know, you don't want to just show up with, you know, a plate of biscuits. You know, Merry Christmas, here's some biscuits. You want, oh, what have you made? I'm like, oh, we have to eat this. This is fantastic. Or why bother?
I just like your reaction to these phantom, you know, guests or friends or family members that I'm taking this Nutella braid to on a Christmas day. Oh, what have you... It's like we're on a roller coaster. So the Nutella braid, what is the length of prep time?
On this, I would say prep time, 30 minutes tops. And it's a yeast dough, and it's only 30 minutes because when you mix a yeast dough, you kind of want to let it sit for about 20 minutes just to kind of calm down a little bit so it's easier to work with.
With a tea towel over it, right?
Yes. You don't want to get dry.
There you go.
It looks dry bread.
No one likes dry bread. Hear that? Listen to that. No one likes dry bread.
I feel confident making that statement.
What is sourdough not a dry bread?
I guess nobody likes a dry dough because if you have dry dough, your bread's gonna turn out really, really weird.
Okay.
You're not gonna like it.
So 30-minute prep time, that's probably not including the dough sitting for 20 minutes, or does that take...
That is including it.
Holy cow. And then what's the bake time?
I usually bake until it's golden brown delicious, which can take about anywhere from 20 minutes, 30 minutes, if you have a really, really hot oven, sometimes 15.
And, of course, baking time will vary based on your oven. So know your oven, and as Alton would say, you know the hot spots and the cool spots. And
exactly.
It's not even a bad idea just to rotate that pan about midway through.
I recommend it. Nice and coloring.
I feel like I've learned so much from Good Eats and good conversation here on Nerds United. So if I wanted to take this, if I'm, you know, John listener out there, you know, listening to Nerds United the week of Christmas, and I wanted to make this Nutella braid and take it for my holiday gathering with friends, family, or complete strangers, what would be a good day for me to listen to this to get all my necessary ingredients and time to properly take care of things? What I'm saying is, should I post this on Christmas Eve or should I post this on Monday?
You know what? If you've got the time on Christmas Eve, it can be made that day.
Is it something that's best when it's fresh?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
This was best the day it's made. It's, you know, any kind of bread that you bake is really nice that day because it'll never be softer than within that 24 hours it was taken out of the oven.
So,
and as a bread eater, I feel like I know these things.
Now you've got to warm over a lot of folks who've kind of given up on bread in that anti-gluten movement.
Yeah, you know.
And wait,
I'm still bread strong. I'm team bread.
Are you using, this is a good question we didn't really cover, or maybe you did and I missed it. Are we using all-purpose flour or bread flour?
For this, you can use either or. I just used all-purpose. I feel bread flour is pretty dense, or it's going to yield a pretty dense product. And this is always better if it's a little bit more light. So no reason to spend the extra money on bread flour. Just get good old-fashioned all-purpose.
This podcast will be released, dropped, published, whatever you want to call it, first thing Christmas Eve morning, 6 o'clock. We're getting it out there early. I will be, or have been, since they're listening to this in the future, pumping up the fact that there's an awesome, delicious Christmas treat recipe at the end of this podcast. I'll be hitting that all weekend long in the front part of next week, and hopefully, come Christmas Eve morning, people are out there rushing out there to their stores and getting all the ingredients, and the Nutella braid, the Alice Harvey world famous Nutella braid will be shared.
Hopefully soon, at least.
That's right. Will be shared with dozens, if not hundreds, of homes and parties across the globe.
Awesome.
We talked about TV and movies and a little bit of Christmas. We haven't talked about any more of the Christmas goodies. And, of course, I got to talk about Christmas movies. Got a favorite one? Do you have a favorite three?
A favorite three. Oh, man. I'm not a big Christmas movie fan, but I'd have to say my number one is always going to be A Christmas Story.
All right, fair enough. You'll shoot your eye out.
Number two would be Elf. And number three.
Smiling's my favorite.
Let's see. I really like, I forget the name of it now, but it's the one with the heat miser in it.
A Year Without a Santa Claus.
There we go. That's the one.
Is it sad that I was able to get that one so quickly?
No, it's not. I've watched it 1,000 times. I've never actually taken the time to figure out what it was called.
I, even more sadly, have that movie.
That's not sad at all. I have to wait for it to come on TV.
And, of course, I've also got Rudolph. And Here Comes Santa Claus. And this is a fun story for anybody. And in fact, I went to Facebook or Twitter or both. I can't remember. Last Saturday evening, my wife and I were watching my niece and nephew. And the plan was, because my sister and her husband had a little birthday party there. And they said, hey, you don't get to see these kids as much as you like. Would you like to watch them? I said, heck yeah, we'll have fun. And then she says, do you want to frost Christmas cookies? I said, sure. Do you want there to be any cookies left? And she said, please. So we get over there. We have a quick bite to eat. And my nephew, and he's six, he said, can we watch a Christmas movie? I said, sure, buddy. Which one do you want to watch? And he says, my niece is a few years younger. She says, Santa Claus. And I said, all right, Here Comes Santa Claus, the origin of Santa Claus and Burgermeister Meisterburger. And, they cuddle up, they get comfortable, and 20 minutes in, they're out. And this was 7:30, and I said, crap, looks like no cookies are getting frosted this year. And so the tip for you parents out there is, or anybody who's watching children, if you need them to go to sleep, put in Here Comes Santa Claus, because they'll be asleep faster than you can say Burgermeister Meisterburger. So it was fun. It is a lot of fun. Of course, I kind of love Christmas. I just enjoy, I wish that Christmas feeling, of cheer and joy, and this is going to be real sappy, but I wish it could be bottled up and kept all year round. And I don't know why, after the first of the year or so, people kind of get back to being sour and grumpy and cynical. When for 2 weeks or whatever at the end of the year, everybody's happy and, cheerful. What can we do? We're working right now on Nerd United episode 32, the second annual very special Christmas special to solve the world's problems. Greg Mahochko, Alice Harvey. What can we do, Alice, to keep that joyful mentality and not be sour grapes after the first of the year? What can we as a society do to just be happier more often? Go.
We really have to think about what it is that makes us behave that way during the holidays. Number one, we are all living on a constant sugar high. And I'm not just saying this because I'm a pastry cook. It's
the truth.
We eat a lot of cookies. So number one, we need to eat more cookies.
Cookies. Okay.
More cookies all year round.
I have no problem with that.
Me neither. So that needs to be a thing. And, we're out buying gifts for children. We're actually thinking about other people. You don't realize you're doing it. Oh my gosh, what am I going to get for this person? And then you're really racking your brain to think about that person and kind of know that person for a minute. And when do we really do that any other time of year? Really take the time to think about, what does this person like? What's this person's hobbies? We don't do that really any other time other than Christmas when we're trying to find a gift.
So is there, and a lot of people are going to be like, well, I can't give gifts to everybody every day, but I think we can bottle up that thoughtfulness. You know, it doesn't have to be a gift. It could be, you know, a smile, a hug. It could be any, you know, non-monetary form of appreciation or just an understanding. You know, everybody's going through something. Yeah. So, you know, suck it up and be nice to your fellow man.
Exactly. And why does it have to be limited to 1 month out of the year?
And having cookies, of course, helps.
Of course. Cookies always make me happy.
Do you have a favorite cookie, be it at this time, be it one that you make or dare I say store-bought? I mean, like, are you a diehard Oreo fan? Or you've probably made your own Oreos and then 10 times better than store-bought.
I'm actually really boring. I am a firm believer in a really solid chocolate chip cookie.
If I have
a solid chocolate chip cookie, I want for nothing in the world.
It is solely, we were talking about, you know, at the beginning of the show, we were talking about, you know, brownie batter and, you know, cookie dough, but it is solely my mom's homemade chocolate chip cookies that are to blame for my sweet tooth. And as Jim Gaffigan would say, yeah, because it's your tooth that's putting on all the weight, or something similar. When I was a wee lad, 3 and 4, you know, I get tucked in, put to bed, you know, early, mom and dad go back out, watch, you know, primetime TV, evening news, things like that. I would sneak out of bed. This was, of course, when mom had the fresh-baked chocolate chip cookies. It didn't happen all the time. But I'd sneak out of bed, go to the kitchen, because the bedroom and the family room were on opposite ends of the house. And so I would sneak out, get to the kitchen, which was kind of in the middle, sneak into the pan, that 9x13 with the red plastic cover on it. I'd sneak in there, grab a handful of cookies. I couldn't take them back to bed because, you know, crumbs invite bugs, and bed bugs I didn't want to get bit by, obviously. So I went to another room and sat behind a rocking chair on the floor in the corner eating chocolate chip cookies. That is one of the best memories I have of youth. That trumps any gift that I ever got, you know, from my childhood, because it was delicious, home-cooked, home-baked chocolate chip cookies that I was eating on the sly. So I'm sure mom and dad found out about it. I got away with it for years, but it was what it was, deliciousness. And so I'm right there with you. A delicious chocolate chip cookie, there's really nothing that tops it. So
I agree. I mean, I appreciate the more complicated things, but I mean, if you can take the classic chocolate chip cookie and blow me away with it, then I bow down to you, master of baking, because that's all I need.
And you will not be happy to hear this. I ruined chocolate chip cookies once because I baked them and I forgot the brown sugar.
Oh.
And so I looked, I said, and I even called my mom. I said, Mom, these cookies didn't turn out right. And she asked if I went through over a thing. Yeah, brown sugar. I forgot about the brown sugar, Mom. And so I still ate them. Don't get me wrong. They just didn't have that brown sugary goodness attached to them. So shame on me. Shame on me.
That's
mea culpa.
The most important part.
No, I think the most important part is the chocolate chip, personally.
Oh, yeah. I can't argue with that.
Alice Harvey, I want to thank you so much for joining me. We've had just a kickback, relaxed conversation. We've talked movies and television and Christmas and baking and all kinds of goodness. And they can follow you on Twitter, milkandhoney618.
Yes.
And hit me again with the restaurant name at the Central West End of St. Louis. And
Rosary by Niche.
You're going to have to get that one more time because I was talking all over you.
Oh, God, I'm sorry. That's Browsery by Niche.
Browsery by Niche.
Browsery.
Yes.
Browsery. No, it's a B-R A-S-S-E-R-I-E.
Browsery. But it's French, so that's why I spelled it the way I did.
Yeah.
I was like, it's a place where you go and browse the menu. Browsery.
Of course.
Browsery by Niche.
Yeah.
Central West End. And we'll put the website up. I'm assuming they have a website because it's 2014.
Oh, yes.
So
it's, It should be, oh my goodness, that one I'm going to have to look up for you.
We'll get that. It'll be on the post on jitterymonkey.com. Alice, I want to thank you so much for joining me. I had a heck of a time. And,
me too, thank you.
It has been, I'll tell you, the second annual Very Special Christmas Special takes the first annual Very Special Christmas Special and kicks it in the nards, because that's how awesome this show was. Thanks so much, and I'm just so glad we got finally around to talking a little bit of Christmas stuff. And do you have a Christmas movie quote that you want to send us out on?
I mean, really, are you asking me this?
Yeah.
You'll shoot your eye out.
A crummy commercial? Son of a bitch. Thanks so much, Alice. We'll do it again, and maybe next time we'll actually talk comics.
Maybe.
All right. Alice Harvey, Milk and Honey 618 on Twitter, and go follow her and keep up to date on all the good things happening, not just in the art and comics world, but in the pastry chef world as well. And you can get all the links you need, jitterymonkey.com, and on this post particularly, so you want to go to Nerds United and hit the episodes and you'll find it. Alice Harvey, Milk and Honey 618. That's it for the second annual Very Special Christmas Special. And everybody have a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and get your questions in, because the first episode of 2015, Comics for Beginners. So go to facebook.com/Nerds United Show and get your question asked. And maybe if you have a question for Alice, she might even answer it and get it submitted for that next episode. Who knows? It might just be, yeah, can you spell the name of that restaurant one more time? Because I missed it. So that is it. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. We'll see you next year.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.